What is up, sports fans? Welcome to an all-new episode of Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fans. I got a little bit of allergy going today. But other than that, we're doing pretty good. We got some sports back on the books. And I'm joined, as I always am, by my good friend, the one, the great, JVZ.
As this morning, I kind of did my normal Sunday F1 try to wake up really early so I can catch the race and then fall asleep in the middle of the race type deal. And then I woke up to see Lewis Hamilton, the best racing driver in the world, just riding around the pit lane in a scooter, or on a scooter, like one of those foot propelled ones, and wondering what the hell happened. So it turned out a pretty interesting race this morning where a couple crashes happened pretty close in time to each other, to the point where they had to completely stop the race so that they could clean everything up. And then during that time, Hamilton got a penalty. And so he was riding his scooter all the way down to go complain to the manager of Formula One. And complain about his 10-second penalty that he got for going into the pit lane too early. As a result of the race, basically all the top teams kind of ended up at the back of the pack at the time the race restarted. So it was for the first time in maybe 150 races or so, we got a winner that did not come from Red Bull, Ferrari, or Mercedes. And so everybody is buzzing right now in the F1 universe for one of the most exciting races in a long time. And in fact, not only were the top three teams completely shut out from the winner circle, but like the top four positions came all from other teams. Pierre Gasly won the race, the first French driver to win a race since 1996. The interesting thing about him was that he's racing for AlphaTauri, which is Red Bull's B team, actually. And he was actually kicked out of the A team last year in the middle of the season for poor performance. Since then, he's managed to get on the podium once towards the end of last year, and this is his first race win ever for his young career. So a lot of persistence from that young man. Second was Carlos Sainz, who signed with Ferrari next year. Ferrari is having a terrible season this year, so maybe he's regretting his decision, because this might be the best chance that he had at a race win in a long time. So came up just a little bit short, but it was a very frantic race to the end as he was trying to catch up to Pierre Gasly in front of him. So very fun race. And in other F1 news, this is also the last race that Williams Racing the Williams family is going to be in charge of the Williams race team. The reason why that's significant is that they're kind of the last family. Williams was the last family owned and family run team in Formula One. The rest of the teams had all been bought up by auto manufacturers or other big corporate conglomerates. Mm-hmm. Williams was kind of the last holdout. They've been performing very poorly the last couple of years in terms of results. They have a really long history. They are still second all time in constructors championships behind Ferrari. And on top of that, they've got 7 different drivers championships. Haven't won any titles since 1997. They haven't won a race since 2012. And last year, I think they only scored 1 point the entire season and have yet to score a single point all season this year. And you get points for being in the top 10. So last year they were always the last two cars on the grid. But they've kind of managed to claw their way back from the very basement of F1 to the point where they're at least competitive with the other bottom teams. And so now that they're kind of in a stable position, they've sold to Derilton Capital, who is looking to invest enough money in the team to get it back to a successful team long term. They're going to still keep the Williams Racing name. The family that has long been in charge of the team, Frank Williams, and his daughter Claire, who has also been a figurehead for women in F1 as well. Those two are no longer going to be running the team. So it seems
like they will still have like a pretty big say in things, but yeah, it's a lot of the money is going to be coming from Dalton Capital.
Yeah. Well, Claire Williams said that she's going to stick around for just a little bit just to mm-hmm. kind of ease the transition. But really, she's just tired. After dealing with, you know, the last 5 years or so and trying to pull the team out from the basement. Her words in interviews are that, you know, the team deserves to have somebody that has, you know, more energy to commit to pushing this team forward than she does right now. But it seems like there's a lot of respect for her and the job that she's done since her dad had to kind of take a step back after a pretty horrific injury. There's a lot of respect from the team and from the rest of F1 for the contributions that they've made. This is kind of a landmark moment in F1 with the last of the quote unquote independent teams now finally going the way of corporate capital. If you want to hear more about the history of the team, we've got an article from Jalopnik in the show notes. There's also a pretty good Netflix documentary about the Williams mm-hmm. team.
Yeah.
And of course, Drive to Survive on Netflix kind of covers their struggles for the last couple of years a bit. And I'm sure this year's edition of that show will also cover this transition. But we'll have to wait and see what this ends up doing to the team's future. Hopefully it'll be a good one.
All right, let's talk a little bit about some soccer or things going on in soccer. So Brazil and England have both announced an equal pay movement for their men and women's national teams.
Yeah, so this is kind of something that we've been talking about for the U.S. for a while with the U.S. women's team campaigning for equal pay, or at least somewhat equitable. In terms of, you know, pay per the amount of games that they play, and that kind of got stuck in the courts, and then the U.S. women's team was the ruling didn't go in their favor, so now we're kind of still stuck in the state where the women are just angry at the disrespect, and then at the same time that's happening, you've got Brazil. Both Brazil and England have two of the best national teams in the world when it comes to the men's side. They also have two of the best national teams when it comes to the women's side as well. And they're both making commitments for equal pay. I think Australia and New Zealand and Norway as well have also started the process if they don't have it taken care of already. So, I mean, it's kind of embarrassing at this point to see the U.S. women's national team, despite consistently outperforming the men on an international level, not be able to get equal pay. It's national teams don't get paid a lot of money in general compared to how much the players get paid for their club teams. So it's not like there's a whole lot of money that you have to throw at the women's team to bring them to an equal level. So the fact that the U.S. has U.S. soccer has gone out of their way over and over again to fight against this. And then on top of that, watching other countries around the world. I mean, the Brazilian National Federation has done a terrible job of supporting their women's team in general. If you want to find out more about that, there's an SB Nation video on YouTube talking about their best player, Marta. And it's part of their Untitled series, kind of covering like why this amazing player has never won a title. So it's kind of why she's never won a World Cup, it goes over why she's never won a World Cup, and a lot of it just comes down to just the piss poor support that that the Brazilian women's team got when it comes to investment. And if that team is now getting this kind of support, then that should be the bare minimum for what the U.S. does when they've got the best national team in the world. So it's embarrassing at this point. All right. Lionel yes. Messi.
Let's talk about this the last mess week. Of Messi.
Yeah. He's now kind of going back on his, I wouldn't say he's going back on it, but he's not going to force his way out of the team. Basically all the rulings, meant to judge whether he was going to be allowed to leave without his massive 700 million euro clause being triggered. That all was ruled against him. So he basically has 1 year left on his contract. If he wanted to, he could try to sue his way out of the team. But he says he doesn't want to take the team to court. That would just be not a very good way to spend his last season with the team. So he's going to ride it out for one more year. And then probably leave after that. The team itself is not getting any better. They just lost Luis Suarez to Juventus. So I'm sure he's still upset about the future direction of the team. But he's just going to have to stick it out for another year, before leaving as a free agent to some other team.
Yeah, it's one of those things, right, where it's probably the best thing to do to not leave on such bad terms, but at the same time, it's not like they're doing anything to really make him want to change his mind, right? It's just more, he doesn't want to look like a bad guy to the fans and to the fan base. And he just doesn't want to go that route, right? That will just kind of just tarnish what he is. Cause it's not that he doesn't appreciate the time that he spent there. He just is in this position where right now he's not liking what he sees. And we've seen a lot of sports stars who have lived through those moments and seeing kind of their team go downhill when they're still at the peak of their career, you know, and rather than sometimes taking that opportunity because they think they can put the team on their back or whatever the reason, right? Like part of LeBron's dislike for a lot of people is that, right? Seeing the team go downhill, sometimes trying to put it on his back, but in other times running away somewhere else, right? It's kind of a hard thing to do. It's kind of a hard thing to make that decision one way or the other as to how you do that and how you go about that, right? Because even with all the best intentions in mind, you can sometimes come out of those situations looking like the bad guy. It's rough.
Yeah, and I mean, you would think that would factor in on the team side as well, that like this one player has served your team for so many years, kind of pulled your team to the height of the highest of highs. He's been, you know, his image is inextricable with the franchise. So you'd think like, okay, this is what he wants, then maybe kind of give him what he wants as a thank, especially since like you don't have to you don't have to pay him anything extra for this. You just got to let him go. And we've seen teams do that in the past, but I think in this case, Barcelona decided to dig their heels in. But I don't know. Like, at this point, you're just going to get an unmotivated but professional player for the rest of this year. And then he's going to leave for sure next year. And you're probably not going to be able to convince him to stay. So it's I don't know. I don't know why they're choosing to dig their heels in on this. It also, I mean, other players are kind of watching as well, that, you know, if you treat somebody right, not that they're necessarily wrong, but like maybe if you go out of your way to do something nice for one of your players, who's served the team well for a long time, then maybe other players take notice and they look at that and see like, okay, this is a stand-up organization that will take care of you and won't try to, you know, the law is the law, the contract is the contract, the rules are the rules. But, you know, when it comes time to be sticklers about things, if you do right by them, then maybe they'll have a little bit of leniency when you want something from them. So it's, you know, one player cannot drag this team to competitiveness. You're only one player out of 11 on the field at a time. Even if you are Lionel Messi, it's not like LeBron where you put them on any team and they're instantly should be good enough to make the playoffs. You need a lot more pieces and so he wants to go to a team that's got a lot more pieces, but for now he's going to be stuck with Barcelona. If you want to hear more about his thoughts, he did an interview with goal.com where he kind of talks about how hard it is for him, how hard it was for him to kind of come to this decision, and, you know, the effect that it has on not only on him, but on his family as well. Because his family, like his kids, basically grew up in Barcelona. So so now if he goes somewhere else, he's got to kind of move his family and you know, they're not used to moving around. So it's kind of the other side of being an athlete that we don't necessarily talk about all the time.
Yeah, because Frey, in American sports, it's not that weird. I mean, it's still weird, right? Because you're moving and whatever. But in soccer, your life could drastically change, right? Because he could go from playing in Barcelona to playing in Europe, right? Because he would be open to the world. He'd be open to whoever would be willing to pay for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be leaving Spain probably.
So that is a drastic change on your family, a drastic lifestyle change on your family as well.
And I mean, weather-wise, Spain is a very nice place to live, especially in Barcelona. So
yeah,
but yeah, they'll be changing schools. They'll probably have to learn another language. It's a massive adjustment for everybody. Yeah. Unless they just stay while he goes and plays somewhere else for a little bit and flies back and forth.
But soccer is such a kind of weird homegrown sport. I think he would tend to want to have his family with him because he would be training and, you know, doing all those things for kind of a long period of time in those areas. So it would probably feel a lot more home if you have your family there with you.
Yeah.
It would probably be a lot harder to, you know, have your family living in Barcelona while you're playing in the Champions League.
Yeah, I think the only time I see people just kind of leave their families in one spot is when they get traded.
Yeah.
And then it's like, or when they get traded and they're only going to be at the team they got traded to for like the rest of the season, then they'll leave their family where they are because they know they're just going to have to move again. It's the travel part, the moving part about being an athlete. That's one thing we don't talk about a lot, but it's a tough part of it. I mean, in this case, it's his decision. So it's not, And I guess moving is the decision he wants to make, and he's not being allowed to, but it's just another wrinkle to think about. And just kind of how hard of a decision it was for him to actually come to the conclusion that he needs to go somewhere else. All right. Last soccer story, the NWSL Fall Series is underway. So
yeah, we talked about there being more women's soccer, and it is quickly approaching.
Yeah, it's currently underway right now, and I think they're doing like 18 games. They've kind of split up into a couple different bubbles surrounded around the country, and so they're just going to play like a small set of games. I don't know what they're going to necessarily do for playoffs for this. But yeah, I think they're just kind of capitalizing on the fact that the Challenge Cup was very successful. So it would suck to just end the season with just the Challenge Cup. So
a three region, three team per region pods, as you call them, or bubbles.
Yeah.
Which will be interesting, right? Because each team plays four games.
Yeah. I think it's just 18 matches total.
Yeah.
So it's going to be there's only 9 teams, so that's why like that kind of works out. But it'll be nice for Orlando to participate this time because they missed out on the Challenge Cup.
Yeah.
So it'll at the very least it'll make it so that these players that are in this league get a chance to play this year, or get a chance to play more than just the few games that they got to play for the Challenge Cup if they got eliminated early.
We were talking about I think it was baseball and their weird kind of split regions of their playoffs, where I look at this, these regions and these teams automatically make sense to me.
they're all geographically oriented. It's interesting when you kind of just compare the league sizes, because it's like there's going to be more teams in just the baseball playoffs than there are in the entire NWSL. So this is still a very young league. They're growing. Ratings were pretty better than expected for the both on TV and on CBS All Access for the Challenge Cup. So I think
and having some of these games, like you said, so some of these games are on CBS All Access. Some of these games are also going to be streamed on Twitch.
I think that's for international viewers.
Being their big international partner. So I mean, but that makes it really good, right? Because one of the big things we were talking before the show, how I've been getting more back into sports video games, but one of the big things I've noticed is there are a lot of people on Twitch that like sports, right? Obviously, that's just kind of a weird thing, and they play a lot of sports video games. But there's also a series of people who just love interacting with their chat and talking about real sports, and when they have the ability to, we'll watch whatever sport they can access and show or do things with and interact with while streaming. And that brings a whole other audience to it sometimes, right? Because you might just have people who aren't in the know of those things. Like I was watching a guy the other day who was watching some of the basketball playoff games because he streams a lot of NBA 2K. And there were people in his chat, obviously from other countries or even from ours, that were just like, oh, wait, there is basketball happening. And we're getting into the hype of it. So I think Twitch becoming more of a partner in sports in general is a great way. And just having that internet access, even with CBS All Access, is just a great way to get more people into watching these sports.
Yeah, sports is a very communal thing. And in the COVID era, we're finding better ways to be communal with each other without having to actually just go somewhere or be in the same room as somebody. The gatekeeping is not the right word, because it's just the bar to get viewers is very low now. You don't have to convince some network executive to put your product is good enough to put, you know, in to broadcast over the air. You just put it out there on the internet and somebody will watch. Like any of us can set up our own Twitch channel. And on top of that, like the bar for marketing is low as well. Like, it used to be, you know, if you wanted to print t-shirts, then you gotta print enough to make it worthwhile. And now there are so many services out there that you print stuff on demand. And so now that basically opens the door to every single player in your league being somebody that you can sell a t-shirt for. It makes for, you know, anybody who wants to make a design, a cool logo design for your team, you know, you can capitalize on that and print stuff right away. It's the barrier to marketing is so much lower than before. So I think that's part of why we see esports growing so quickly, and the same thing is true for fledgling traditional sports leagues as well. I mean, the XFL took off so well last year, and a lot of that marketing was kind of just viral marketing online, and so it isn't just the sports landscape changing, but it's the sports business landscape changing as well. So I think, we'll wait and see what kind of effect it has. But I think this is really encouraging for just anybody who wants to start up a new league in general. I think that's why I like to talk about new leagues a lot on this show, just because the chance that they're going to survive if they don't overextend themselves is a lot higher than it used to be. So a lot of wait and see, but a lot of encouraging wait and see.
No, definitely. All right, let's move on from there and let's talk a little bit about football and the goings on. So we've been kind of following the college football stuff that's happening, and talking about what divisions are going and which ones aren't and all the college player stuff. But we are going to be seeing some college football.
Yeah. And some of it has already started. I think some of the smaller conferences have started playing games. Some of the bigger ones, like the Power Five, I think they're still trying to figure out what to do. There's still a lot of talk about COVID and how to handle that. So there was a report that came out earlier this week about myocarditis and its effect on players, but I think the stats for that were all skewed, so that kind of put a scare into everybody earlier this week. There's still just a lot of back and forth. There's still like negotiation between the players, and a lot of these schools are not bringing students onto campus, but they want to bring football players onto campus so that they can kind of continue to play and continue to make money, and that all these TV deals that they've struck are things that they can still fulfill, and they won't lose all that money. But that's the only reason to do it at this point. So we'll have to see how that goes. Maybe we end up postponing until spring, or like some conferences just kind of power through it until you get an outbreak and then have to cancel everything. Because I don't trust college football teams to be able to handle things well. I barely trust the professional teams to do that. And we've seen how bad it gets for like baseball teams. Although baseball is still kind of making it work for now. It's going to get even worse when you've got college teams that are not as well run, with rosters that are four times as large as a baseball team, and young kids that are going to be not so great at following the rules. So it's it's going to be rough. The NFL might do a better job. They're starting this Thursday. We're powering through with our fantasy league.
Yeah.
With the expectation that we might not make it through the entire season. But yeah, it's going to be fun. Well, we'll talk about the NFL a little bit later when it comes to some of the roster moves that have been made. Basketball news. We've progressed a little bit in the playoffs. The Rockets actually, they had a pretty exciting 7-game series with the Oklahoma City Thunder. And the storylines between that and Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook and James Harden, those were pretty interesting. But a new name to kind of pop out of nowhere was Lu Dort, who did a pretty good job of trying to guard James Harden all series, and kind of made a name for himself, even though the Oklahoma City Thunder did not advance. But that was a team that we all thought was going to not make the playoffs. We all thought they were going to tank. We all thought they were going to get rid of Chris Paul. And they managed to make the playoffs this year. This after getting a massive haul for both Russell Westbrook and another massive haul for Paul George. So the future of that team is looking pretty bright. Even if they do end up getting rid of Chris Paul next year. But meanwhile, the Rockets advanced and they actually took the first game off of the Lakers. I think LeBron has kind of a terrible record when it comes to the first game of a lot of different playoff series. If he's going to lose one, he's going to lose the first one. They dropped the first game to the Portland Trail Blazers in the first round as well. So I think, I don't know. Expect them to bounce back. Just LeBron dropping the first game usually is not an indicator of anything bigger than just they just dropped the first game. The Nuggets and Clippers are tied at 1 game apiece. The Celtics and Raptors are tied at 2 games apiece. I think the Celtics were up 2 games, and then OG Anunoby hit a 3-pointer to win the 3rd game, and then the Raptors got the 4th game as well. So it's weird because I think of like the Raptors are the higher seed, and then they lost the first 2 games. So I'm thinking, oh, they've got to play the next 2 games on the road, but there really is no road games. They're all playing in the same place. They're playing in the bubble. So it's weird getting out of the mindset of home court advantage, because everybody's playing on the road now. Everybody's playing in Orlando and nobody is quite at home. The last series I think is catching everybody off guard. The Miami Heat are kicking the shit out of the Milwaukee Bucks, who I think at least 2 of the 3 of us picked to win the championship this year.
I know we don't have a lot of time to talk about this, but this has been the most surprising thing to hit me in this whole like weird series and season is the Bucks losing ground to the Heat has been one of the weirdest things I have seen. Like, 1 game was okay. Like, I was like, all right, hey, you know what? You know, Jimmy Butler went out there and had an amazing game. But now I'm like, wait, what's happening?
Yeah, it slowly progressed from what you said, to just slight concern to something is very seriously wrong here. Actually, no, it's gone beyond that. It's gone beyond something is wrong in Milwaukee to Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to leave in 2 years. That's how bad it's gotten that that people are basically at the point where they're coming to the conclusion that this team is not good enough for Giannis Antetokounmpo to win a championship. So therefore, when his contract is up, he is going to leave and go somewhere else. This is a thing that happens to every superstar player that plays in a small market. Everybody just keeps talking about like, oh, the Lakers are going to go get them. They're going to go sign with some other top team. And it sucks for small market teams, but yeah, Giannis is only playing like 36 minutes a game, and so Coach Mike Budenholzer is getting a lot of criticism for that minutes cap, especially when you're talking about putting the MVP of the league, or at least the presumptive MVP of the league this season on a minutes restriction. Not just him, but Chris Middleton as well. Just the seeming the resistance to playing your best players for a lot of minutes when your back is kind of against the wall. I mean, these are all must-win games right now, and then they're playing again today, game four. So every game is an elimination game at this point. So so it's going to be if this team gets eliminated, I think it'll be a pretty big upset. But I mean, at the same time, the Miami Heat are playing out of their minds, and I know we slandered Jimmy Butler a little bit last week, he seems to be a great fit for that Miami Heat team. His brand of being both very persistent and very driven is something that team needed, and quite frankly, it's something that Philadelphia, the team he left, is missing. So so maybe last week we didn't give him enough credit for being the kind of player he is, because he is an annoying little git sometimes, but in this case he's being an annoying little git in maybe the best possible way possible. So kudos to Miami I think they basically managed to rebuild from losing LeBron. I know that was like 7 years ago or so, but I think they managed to recover from losing LeBron, losing Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh getting his career-ending injury, and they've managed to build at this point what we have to call a contender. So it's good on the Miami Heat.
Yeah. No, like we thought the Bucks were gonna have a really easy route coming from the East, and unless they instantly turn it around, which it just doesn't look like they can, now we put ourselves in the position where we thought, oh, the Bucks could have an easy time coming out of the East, which, and then the West is going to beat up on each other. It looks like it falls more into what you said. We have teams on both sides who could really fight for it, and we might come into a finals where people are just really beat up.
Yeah. But I think it's going to be fun to watch. I mean, everything since the bubble started has been incredibly fun. I know ratings are down, but I feel like the quality of basketball is way better than anybody expected. I think it was expected that everybody would be kind of rusty, but not only have people not been rusty, I think shooting percentages are up. The drama level of some of these games has been off the charts, and I think this has been a very successful experiment by the NBA, and a pretty memorable one. At this point, I feel like all the games have been so good, and the quality of play has been so good, that I don't think people are going to be talking about asterisks by the end of this. Whoever comes out of this at the end, will know that team went through hell to win this championship. And I think hopefully they'll get all the credit that they deserve for that. All right. One, interesting story from outside the bubble. I think a lot of NBA teams are kind of losing money, so they're trying to figure out, what to do about that. I know the Kings are losing a ton of money, because not only are they not that rich to begin with, but they also bought a shit ton of real estate around the arena when they built it, and nobody is going to those stores right now because COVID. So they're a little bit over leveraged. But I'm still paying them season ticket money right now, and I'm not going to games. So, I mean, nobody can go to games, but it's, we don't know when we're going to be able to go back into the stadiums at this point. So one thing the Detroit Pistons are being a little bit creative about is that they're actually just going to offer interest on deposits for season tickets. So I think they're offering about 5%, which is not bad. That's more than you can get from a bank right now. So yeah. If you put down a like a $990 deposit, which is their cheapest full season ticket package, okay. Right now, you get $17 in interest.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure like...
This is through Flagstar Bank, which is a bank that is based here in Southeast Michigan, guys. And aside from COVID, the last couple of years, Piston tickets haven't been selling so well because they're kind of in that middle ground of not tanking and not being a contender. So nobody really wants to see that. And they're doing something a little more creative. In the last couple of years, Flagstar Bank has been one of the Pistons sponsors. They are one of the companies that you might occasionally see on Pistons jerseys since the NBA allowed advertising on jerseys. The Pistons have been a partner with Flagstar Bank for a while, so this is kind of a natural progression for them. It may seem like an interesting idea. JVZ, Kaz, I'd really love to know what you guys think of this.
I'm going to call up my season ticket rep and ask if they can implement something like this, because right now, like I said, like I'm paying like $120 a month to kind of fill up my my $2,000 for two tickets deposit for I don't know when. I don't know when we're going to get games again. So like, why am I continuing to pay them money? Like, and right now, if I were to ask them that question, I don't think they would have a good answer. Other than maybe I want to keep my seats, but nobody wants to buy seats right now because this team sucks ass. So, I mean, it's not like I'm competing with anybody for these seats. So you got to give me some reason to continue paying into this, especially when there's no end in sight for when we might be able to actually get the thing that we're going to pay for. This is like a Kickstarter project that you just keep paying money into, but you don't know when the actual thing you bought is going to arrive. So at least the Pistons can guarantee that once you pay into this, whenever it does cash out, you'll get a little bit more for the fact that you were willing to let them hold your money for a little bit, you know? So, I mean, this is a good idea. And this is pretty creative. I mean, $17 for a year is not a whole lot, but a lot of what these teams let you do sometimes is they'll give you that credit and then you can use those to upgrade your seats for different games. So, I mean, well, and that $17 in general is probably enough for at least a single game in the upper deck. Between paying for upgrades, or maybe you can spend it on food in the games. I know I spend a lot of money on hot dogs and whatever concessions during the games that I normally go to. So just being able to get like little credits like that, it's just a nice gesture of goodwill for your most loyal fans. And so I think, it's a very smart idea from the Pistons to do this. And so smart, in fact, that I'm going to use this as a basis for complaint when I talk to my ticket rep. Moving on from one basketball story to... I don't want to say the big basketball story of the week, but at least the big non-game basketball story of the week. Kind of came. The term that I hear is this did not come from left field. This came from completely out of the stadium. Steve Nash got hired by the Brooklyn Nets to be their head coach.
Yeah.
This is after Kenny Atkinson was the head coach coming into this year. I think he was pretty well respected, definitely respected as a player development coach. And basically took that Nets team led by D'Angelo Russell last year and brought them into the playoffs kind of a lot earlier than anybody expected. So I think he got a lot of credit for that. And then the offseason happened and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant decided that they want to go play in New York, but not for the Knicks. So that meant playing for the Brooklyn Nets. And they kind of just decided that on their own without really talking to the Nets. But then the Nets said, okay, sure. Like, we're not going to turn this down. Two all-star level players deciding to come play for us. That's a good thing. But then they kind of had to shift everything around. They kind of had to shift their development plans and their overall priorities. They weren't a young up-and-coming team anymore. They were now having to shift into championship contender mode. And that means keeping your stars happy, keeping Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, two guys that are not necessarily known for being the most level-headed people in the NBA, keeping those guys happy. So at some point in the middle of the season, even though Kevin Durant hasn't played all year and Kyrie Irving was injured for most towards the end of the season, Kenny Atkinson was fired. Jacques Vaughn, his assistant, replaced him. And then going into the bubble, I don't think anybody was really sure what they could expect from the Nets, but they actually came out and played really well. And Jacques Vaughn got a lot of praise for that as well, for leading a kind of a team of misfits without that didn't have Kevin Durant, didn't have Kyrie Irving. DeAndre Jordan decided not to play in the bubble. They're missing basically a ton of people, and they had to go out and sign Jamal Crawford and a couple other old veterans to just come play out the rest of the season with them. And they actually did a really good job. So I think there was some talk that Jacques Vaughn would get serious consideration for this job. There was also talk that they wanted to go hire Greg Popovich from the Spurs, which that was probably a long shot. The one thing nobody really expected was to go out and hire somebody who has no coaching experience whatsoever in Steve Nash. It kind of reminds me of the time where they just hired Jason Kidd when he had no experience. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of a disaster for them. In fact, I think 16, six, there, there's been 16 instances in at least more recent NBA history of coaches being hired without any prior coaching experience. I think the most notable success stories are Steve Kerr coaching the Warriors, I think Larry Bird had a couple good years. Doc Rivers is on this list, and he's a very well respected coach now. But his first stint as a coach in Orlando did not go so well. So I don't even count that as a success. But I count him as a good head coach.
Yeah.
So I
think for some people, and you know, taking the weirdness out of it, sometimes it's more about the name, right? Jason Kidd was more about the name. If we go down that list of kind of people, right? Jason Kidd, Magic Johnson, Derek Fisher, yeah. We're more about their names and who they were. Some of these other guys, they were kind of good name, good humor, kind of could be the face without a face on the court of your franchise, right? And I think in Brooklyn, it's a mix, right? Steve Nash is just a super likable guy. He's a name that brings some legitimacy with it.
He's so likable, Kevin Durant wanted him.
Yeah, right.
And that's probably the real reason this move was made, because Steve Nash had previously been a player development, not coach, but like a consultant for player development in Golden State with the Warriors when Kevin Durant was there. So, and on top of that, he is also a former teammate of Sean Marks, who is the Brooklyn Nets general manager. So they have a relationship there. The one common factor for most of the names on this list of players hired without experience is that they were point guards. So these are guys that were known for coordinating the team's offense, at least as a player. So a lot of these guys, sometimes you hear like, oh, these guys are the coaches that are on the floor. Or they're an extension of the head coach. So I think that's, you know, every time a name gets hired like this, then you see the same narratives get thrown out, like, oh, he did a pretty good job of running the team when he was a player, so maybe he'll do a good job of running the team as a coach.
They have a high basketball IQ.
High basketball IQ. Basically stuff like that. And I don't know. I don't like it as much. There's, along with the story, it comes with a racial component to the discussion, because there are a lot of black assistant coaches around the league that are kind of just waiting for their turn. And then you go out and hire a white dude that has no coaching experience whatsoever. I don't know if you can chalk this up to that, just because this seems to be a decision that was made to please Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. But at the same time, I feel like this is a discussion that needs to happen every time this happens. And I just don't like it in general when, I talked about it with the GM discussion with when I was ranting about Vlade Divac. Like, you want to go out, you should want to go out and hire somebody that has experience, that has paid their dues a little bit, that has proven that at least at a rudimentary level they can coach.
JVZ, you said that you like to bring this up every time something like this happens. I don't like talking about that particular subject, because I'm kind of at the point where I really just have no faith in the NBA anymore with these kinds of things. And I think that this is, it's as much an issue of the NBA being so player driven that general managers and front offices are so afraid of making their star players upset or making decisions they don't like, so they acquiesce to their star players 100% of the time. Also, I do think that there is an element to the idea of black assistant coaches being left in purgatory while someone will get hired out of nowhere. I think it's a little bit of both of these, to where if there is somebody that your star player wants and believes they can listen to. I'm not too sure about Kyrie Irving, by the way. I really don't think he's going to last very long doing well with Steve Nash as his head coach. I just don't see it. I think that this is going to be one of those things that will probably blow up in the Nets' faces. And then when the story is written, it'll be as much on Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving as it is the Nets' front office for not saying, that's fucking ridiculous. We're not hiring Steve Nash.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But it's also one of those things, at least on the very minimal perspective of Kyrie Irving, he has done some surprising things in surprising positions, right? And I could almost see Kyrie Irving being the kind of guy to respect someone like Steve Nash enough to want to listen to him, right? Does it mean down the road that he will continue to do so? That is the mist that surrounds Kyrie Irving. But I feel like the mystique of him enough is he's seen what Steve Nash can do, and he knows of him. And I feel like for some weird reason, this would be a person that Kyrie Irving, all of a sudden you hear all these, like, how much he looked up to him and how much he wants to learn from him and all those kind of things. But it's what happens a year or two down the line if they're not winning games in Kyrie's mind the way that they should be, right? Who does he turn on first? Does he turn on Kevin Durant or does he turn on Steve Nash?
He's going to turn on somebody that much.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's like being a good coach and there's being a good enough coach, and then there's being a coach that can win you a championship. And the championship part of it is kind of a crapshoot. We just got done talking about how competitive the top of the league is.
You know now. What? And even despite, you know, the race issues of certain people not getting looked at for certain jobs, because I kind of lean in the same thing as DJM, where it's not always necessarily a race issue as much as it is a likability accountability issue. I just don't think we're in the era of great coaches anymore. Even outside of some guys who we have seen do good things with teams, I just don't think we're in that era anymore.
Yeah, and in a way, I mean, this goes back to DGM's point that the league is so player-driven that you superstar players have such an effect on the game, not just, you know, from the stuff they say off the court, but like just on the court in general. Like they play, you know, they play for a majority of the game. They are 1/5 of the five guys on the floor. And on top of that, you know, the really, really good players, you put the ball in their hands all the time. So they have a tremendous effect on the success of the team. So sometimes the talent just wins out, and sometimes you kind of just have to structure your team around these players instead of trying to get these players to buy into a system. Coaching, in a way, you can kind of point to Steve Kerr, who is another name on this list of guys who was a broadcaster before then. He was also a general manager before then, before he got hired as a coach. So at least there was some experience there. But as a coach, he kind of, at that point that he became a coach, Steph Curry is already a superstar. Klay Thompson was just becoming a superstar. Draymond Green was establishing himself as an extremely useful player. And Mark Jackson had taught that team how to play defense. Mark Jackson's another name on this list, by the way. So at that point, you almost have to ask, like, how much coaching did he really do when you've got that much talent on your team? I think that's a little bit disrespectful, because from what I've heard, he's done a pretty good job from an X's and O's perspective. But then, could he have done the same thing from an X's and O's perspective if he was given a trash team? And you can kind of see this year with the amount of talent he was missing on the team that they didn't do so well. So it's weird, because it's like there's coaches that you kind of want to hire for young teams to teach them and turn these young players into good players. And there's coaches that do a better job of just shepherding teams that are already good and trying to push them to be great. It's a much more complicated discussion than is this guy a good coach or not. There's different attributes. The one thing that I want to include in the show notes is a pretty good ESPN kind of breakdown of all the coaches that are kind of available at this point. And they do a pretty good job of actually separating all these different coaches into these different categories. this is a coach that is, that's, you know, a player development coach. This is a coach that is a good personality management coach. This is a coach that is, and then on top of that, it separates them into these are assistant coaches that have never had an opportunity before, but deserve one. These are guys who have had chances to be head coaches in the NBA, but for whatever reason, they got fired. But maybe they would be, maybe they would do a good job if you hired them again for your team. When we talked about the Knicks hiring Tom Thibodeau, and the reason why he was hired was because he's known as a good player development coach, despite all the other issues of him being a head coach. It's a very complicated, multifaceted discussion. That can be pretty interesting if you want to dive into it, but it's stuff like that that makes me pause whenever a team like the Brooklyn Nets goes out and says, I'm going to go out and get that guy because he might be good for, you know, this one reason. For when they go out and then they hire somebody and then they justify it by saying, oh, he's got good, Kevin Durant might listen to him. And it just feels like those are very hypothetical things. Even if Kevin Durant did go out and say, hey, I want you to go out and hire this guy. They got to spend a long time together. Who knows how well they're going to get along for a full year. At some point, you do have to fall back on X's and O's. At some point, you do have to fall back on player development, these fundamental cornerstones of being a head coach. And then if you want to just throw out hypothetical things like, oh, he was a good coach on the floor, he has a good basketball IQ, there's just not a lot of substance there. It just makes me feel like this is going to blow up in 2 years because you somehow went out and got the coach that you wanted to get all along and didn't do a thorough bottoms up analysis for why you should hire this one coach over all the other coaches that you could have hired, over the list of 30 to 50 other names of qualified candidates that that might deserve a shot. It's an interesting discussion, but we'll have to wait and see. Steve Nash might turn out to be a great head coach. But if this list, everybody on this list except for Steve Kerr did not really work out. So it's not an encouraging sign. Jacques Vaughn kind of got hosed on this as well. He's staying on as an assistant coach. So there's at least going to be some continuity there. There's going to be some structure there and a familiar face for at least the non Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant players to learn from and get behind. I don't know. I would feel better about this if the announcement was Jacques Vaughn is the head coach and Steve Nash was hired as one of the assistants. I would feel a lot better about that than the way it's actually turned out. You could play this back for me in 2 years and I could be dead wrong about this. We've been wrong about this stuff before. So I just don't think it's a very good decision-making process more than anything else. All right. Oh, and in other coaching news, Tyronn Lue has been hired by is close to being hired by the 76ers. And apparently from all this talk about Steve Nash getting hired, now Chauncey Billups wants to be a head coach. So add another name to the list of point guards that are former players that don't have coaching experience that could get hired as a head coach in the next couple of years because people say that person has a good basketball IQ. We'll see how that plays out. On to the NFL. As we mentioned, this coming Thursday is the first game of the season. We've got some late cuts to NFL rosters. I think some that were kind of surprising. Adrian Peterson, yeah. I think, caught everybody off guard because nobody really knows who the rest of the running backs are on the Washington football team. Lamar Miller from the Patriots. The Patriots also cut both of their kickers. So I think they're bringing in people for tryouts, but as of right now, going into the season, they don't have any kickers.
Maybe they just don't plan on kicking the ball ever again.
Yeah, I mean, Bill Belichick's up to something.
Yeah.
we gotta fall back to that at this point. It's maybe this is just next level tanking by just the kicking position is the leading scorer position on the team. You just don't really think about it that way because they get their points in chunks of three instead of chunks of six and seven. But you know, they score more than anybody else does. And it's so going into the season without one of those guys, without a reliable one on your team is a bold move, bold strategy, unless the whole point of this is to try to lose as many games as possible and tank. They could bring back Adam Vinatieri, who is a free agent. That would be a pretty good story, I think. But for now, no kickers on that team. If you're about to do a fantasy draft, keep that in mind. Leonard Fournette was kind of a surprising one. Cut by Jacksonville Jaguars, who at this point, it basically looks like they're going to be pulling the same type of tank job that the Miami Dolphins tried to pull last year. and I would say Miami would, it kind of worked because the guy that we were all kind of thinking that they would get to a Tagovailoa ended up falling to them at five. At this point, that they're at the point where I think they're just getting rid of any assets they have, and then they're gonna tank for Trevor Lawrence and then try to. I mean, this is a really risky draft to try to tank for at this point because you don't even know if we're gonna have a college football season. So
I mean, but you have a good amount of tape on most of the people coming out. And even if we don't have a college football season, most of those top 20 prospects that would be coming out, I would expect people to have some vision of, and you kind of then have this guarantee that those guys are really healthy, right? Like to a certain degree.
That's a good point. I just think it becomes tough when you're trying to evaluate the top 20 guys or so against each other.
Yeah.
Because then it becomes, then you want a little bit more game footage.
But I think if you know where you want to go on what side of the ball, you know what I mean? You kind of feel, I don't know. Now I second guess what I said.
Yeah, because I mean, just think of like the progression that you go through a full season. And maybe for somebody like me as somebody who just doesn't follow college football, I feel like the person you think of as the presumptive number one overall, you could probably go through all of our previous episodes and the times that I use the word presumptive number one overall pick, it's probably a different person every single time. Because the narrative keeps changing around who's good, who's better than everybody else. Who do you take? At the very beginning of the season, we were definitely talking tank for Tua Tagovailoa. And then this Joe Burrow guy seems to come out of nowhere. Maybe it's not out of nowhere for people that follow college football, but that was not a name that I really knew all that well. And then he had a good season, and then he's the number one overall pick. And the guy that I thought.
What's that? Breaking NFL signing news. Possibly the best example of an NFL quarterback who continues to keep getting them checks. Josh McCown, 41-year-old Josh McCown, signing with the Philadelphia Eagles to be on their practice squad, making him the oldest practice squad player in NFL history, per Adam Schefter.
He has a high NFL IQ.
I mean, quarterbacks tend to, but yeah, Josh McCown is, he's like career backup player. I can't remember a time in my life when Josh McCown was not a backup quarterback for some team. Practice squad is kind of weird because just for the fly by night sports fans out there, the practice squad is like not the main NFL roster. There's like 55 guys that you have on the main roster. And then there's like another 10 people or so. Maybe they've expanded that in recent years, but there's like another small group of people that you sign so that you can, these guys practice with the team, but they're still kind of available to get signed by other teams if they really need somebody. But it's kind of akin to the two-way players in the G League. These are guys that you don't really expect to be on the team, but it's weird that somebody would use a spot like that for Josh McCown. I don't know, maybe having that kind of experience on the practice squad. DJM points out that he once ran a play at wide receiver, so maybe he can help tutor the other wide receivers on the practice squad. It's weird that the Eagles would, I think he might have been, he probably spent time at backup quarterback for the Eagles at some point in recent years. I feel like he did. But I also feel like he did that for every team at some point. He's just a name that's floated around the league for that long that I can't remember who he has and has not played for at this point. To me, the Eagles went all out at quarterback. I mean, they've got Carson Wentz, and then they went and drafted another quarterback pretty high in the draft to be his backup, Jalen Hurts, so that, you know, because they do value the backup quarterback position. But now they're going deeper, even further, past the emergency quarterback position, all the way down to practice squad quarterback. And they got a veteran 41-year-old Josh McCown for that. So he's going to make $12,000 a week for that. This tweet from Schefter actually makes it pretty clear. He's going to serve as the emergency quarterback. So I guess he is the third quarterback on that roster. I guess he'll get paid $12,000 a week to kind of just stay on hold in Texas until either one of Carson Wentz or Jalen Hurts gets injured, and then they'll bring him in to be the backup. Not a bad deal for Josh McCown to be continuing to get paychecks this late into his career. I think only Tom Brady at this point has been this productive this late into their career.
We started talking about the Bucks and making jokes, and then, you know,
the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, not the Milwaukee.
The Tampa Bucks. Bay Buccaneers, who Tom Brady is now their quarterback of the future. we kind of started it as like, oh, this is the Brady farewell tour, right? This is what you do. You kind of go. You've serviced the team that you're going to service, being the Patriots, and now you go to another team, and you know you might have a good year or two, and then you kind of fade off into the sunset. But now, as we get closer and closer to possibly playing some NFL football, we're looking at this Bucs team, and on paper, they look pretty damn good.
Yeah.
You know, you do the thing that you do to entice all quarterbacks. You get them a end or a receiver that they know and that they like. So they went out and somehow got Rob Gronkowski, who was retired.
He's not still the 24/7 champion, is he? The
WWE 24/7 champion. DJM.
He is not.
Yeah, DJM's.
He is not. Okay. Okay.
So let's look at this roster real quick, right? And it's going to be a who's who of kind of football right now, right? So you got Tom Brady at QB, Rob Gronkowski playing one of the ends, OJ Howard at the other end. In the middle there, you got Mike Evans, John Franklin, Chris Howard. That's your receiving core right there. LeSean McCoy LeSean McCoy is at least listed on this roster. Is as one of the players who is on this Tampa Bay roster. Ronald Jones is another person in that backfield. Leonard Fournette, as we just talked about. Keyshawn Vaughn, also in the backfield for them. So at least, no disrespect to Ronald Jones, but three names on your backfield that I'd be happy with having one of. You know, Ndamukong Suh running your defense was one of your defensive tackles.
Okay, I did not get that memo either. like this team is even better than I thought it was.
Guys, isn't this
Jason Pierre-Paul is one of their linebackers?
Isn't this what people were saying about the Browns a couple of years ago?
Okay, I still think the Browns have a legitimate chance. They just don't have a defense.
Okay.
And
also, I mean, Baker Mayfield struggled, a lot of people were, I think, premature with saying that just because this is, the expected performance was relying on the expected development of your star quarterback. I shouldn't say star quarterback, of your starting quarterback. In this case, the quarterback is Tom Brady. So, you know, there's going to be at least a minimum level of competence when you've got perhaps the greatest NFL player of all time starting as your quarterback. There's going to be an intelligence level at the quarterback position that you can expect, even if the athletic part isn't quite there. But on top of that, he's going to be, you are surrounding him with the weapons that he's comfortable with. This wide receiving core it was already a really good wide receiving core because this is the same wide receiving core that caught 5,000 yards from Jameis Winston last year. A lot of that 5,000 was making up for the fact that he threw 30 interceptions, but... But at the same time, like it was still like a very high powered offense. So you don't really, you kind of just need Tom Brady to get the ball to the plethora of weapons that are surrounding him. You don't actually have to ask him to do all that much. But on top of that, if you do, you give him a target that he's very comfortable with in Rob Gronkowski. And on top of that, I mean, this Leonard Fournette signing, assuming he's healthy, I mean, I feel like he was cut from the Jaguars because they were trying to tank, not because he wasn't necessarily good enough. And maybe because the timeline of his contract wasn't necessarily matching up with the timeline of their rebuilding that they want to do. So he was a surprise cut. I think that was a cut that caught everybody off guard when it happened earlier in the week. And I think people still think of Leonard Fournette as a good player, even if he hasn't performed that well. I think it was last year. But before then he was a stud running back. So I know we talk lot about, and I in particular talk a lot about, you know, when running backs stop performing well, they kind of fall off a cliff. Maybe that's the case for somebody like LeSean McCoy, who was a signing that I just found out about 5 minutes ago. But I don't think that's the case for Leonard Fournette. So I think they've got a very balanced team here on top of being, I would say this is a team that is above average at every single position, on offense. So the question,
you look at it with those factors in mind, right? Leonard Fournette, can he stay healthy, right? LeSean McCoy has had the same issues in the past of can he stay healthy. But if you're splitting up those carries between him, Fournette, and Vaughn, right, you have three pretty good running backs. Maybe even one exceptional in either McCoy or Fournette who could do 20, 30, 40 carries a game standing next to or behind Tom Brady and then that receiving core, right? If their line holds up, you know, you throw a guy in there for four or five plays a game, you don't really have to worry about the health factor at that point, right? Because obviously if Brady can get it going with that receiving core, you have these guys in there for those 30, 40, but it's split up between three to four really good running backs. So it's not a workhorse situation where if your workhorse goes down, your team goes down because you have two, three other guys you can rely on. So it's a really weird, interesting team that you have here, because I thought this team was going to be Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, shut down Rob Gronkowski. That's pretty much it. But now it's looking like I don't know where they even had all this extra money from either. So I'm really curious. I'm going to go look at numbers after this.
I mean, I think it's just because this wide receiving core. I mean, Mike Evans is kind of the name everybody knows. But the rest of that, like, I don't think they've, I mean, and maybe somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think they've had to pay out a ton of money to the people on this roster yet.
Your deal.
Yeah, and I mean, Tom Brady might be the most expensive person on this team. But long term, that's not going to be that big a deal. That's a 2-year contract. It's you know, and he's not getting paid, you know, Deshaun Watson Patrick Mahomes money. It's kind of a reasonable contract for a good player. I don't know. I think this is I don't feel like it's been that sneaky, because going out and signing Tom Brady is not an under the table sneaky move. I think we're going into the season realizing that this team might be a Super Bowl contender.
And that being said, I didn't mean for it to come across as though any of this was sneaky. I just think they played their cards right at the right time, right? Yeah. I think we and a lot of people were fooled by the Tom Brady signing as a thing of like, well, somebody was going to, and it just so happened to be the Bucks, and this is the farewell tour kind of thing. And we kind of got lulled into this thing of like, they're not going to do much. And then you have the Rob Gronkowski thing, and that brings a little bit of weirdness about, but it still kind of is like, you know what? It's the Brady farewell tour. You know, we don't need to look at Tampa Bay. And then, like you said, right, you already have this established receiving core there. And now you go out and you get two running backs to add to that team. I've seen LeSean McCoy run routes, so
he can catch the ball.
I've never seen much of Leonard Fournette's route running, but beside the point, you kind of not necessarily sneakily, but quietly make this team look like a really good competitor.
Yeah, this team won 7 games last year. With their starting quarterback throwing 30 interceptions. So there was something there. There was definitely substance there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, we're slandering Jameis Winston a little bit, but you know, he got LASIK. He's going to be fine. It's like I believe in him too, but
obviously coming out of that, We see, and this is where you have to have forethought, right? And this is why we're a fly by night sports fan. We said this team was a good team. they just needed a better quarterback, whether that be for like whether that been Jameis Winston with his LASIK eye surgery, or you now have one of the best quarterbacks in the game. So we didn't have the forethought. They did.
I think it's worth it to ask the question. Like, this team did some considerable damage when they threw the ball to the other team 30 times. What if they only did it 15 times? Just that alone. And then now you ask that question, what if they only do it 15 times and they upgrade at so many different positions? So this team is going to be dangerous. They are in the same division as the New Orleans Saints, who are also have a very, very tight championship window. So they're going to be going all out this year as well. So that's the Falcons and the Panthers are probably going to be getting the shit kicked out of them this year by those two teams. But it's going to be quite a battle in the NFC South. But I think the Saints kind of had the edge in everybody's mind before, but now I think people are going to rethink that a little bit going into the season. But we'll have to play these games to find out for sure. Let's see, some other news. Oh, and they also added Josh Rosen as a backup quarterback. After he was cut by the Dolphins. So that's not a terrible addition either. I think he's a couple years removed from being the Cardinals first round pick. And then they got the first round. Then they got the number one overall pick and took Kyler Murray. So then he became surplus to requirements. Then went to Miami, where he became surplus to requirements after they got Tua. So he hasn't had the most impressive career so far, but you only really need him to be a backup to Tom Brady. So that's so not a bad name to get there. But if you do have your franchise quarterback, make sure you sign him to a big contract, because then you can lock him down for several years. The Houston Texans just did that with Deshaun Watson, who got a 4-year extension to the 2 years still remaining on his contract. That total amount is going to be $177 million going all the way through the 2025 season. About 111 of that is in, I guess, quote unquote guarantees. These are for like roster bonuses and stuff. So I guess as long as he stays healthy, then Deshaun Watson is now rich. I feel like Deshaun Watson was Lamar Jackson before Lamar Jackson was Lamar Jackson. He was an incredibly dynamic. It was and still is an incredibly dynamic player. I think Lamar Jackson kind of just took both the passing and the running to a completely unheard of level last year. And I feel like it kind of overshadowed Deshaun Watson. On top of that, Deshaun Watson had his primary target, DeAndre Hopkins, traded away in the offseason for an inexplicable return. So I think there's kind of a question of what kind of weapons he's going to have over the next couple years. But I guess they're expecting big things out of Will Fuller. This team won its division last year. But then the Tennessee Titans, the team that finished behind them, ended up making the AFC championship game. So they're going to have some contenders there. The Colts are not going to be a pushover team either. The Jags are the other team in that division, and we just talked about them tanking out of their minds this year. So who knows how well the Texans are going to do this year, but at least they've got their quarterback locked down long term. This might be a multi-year process for them. Let's not forget about Deshaun Watson as we fawn over all these other newfangled young quarterbacks that we love. Deshaun Watson was one of the first of those guys to capture our attention, and we shouldn't forget about him. The other interesting wrinkle about this deal is this kind of equates to just short of $40 million a year. it's kind of Patrick Mahomes money, but not a Patrick Mahomes length contract.
So I think it goes to say with all the things you just said about him, right? Good player just doesn't have the same dynamic ability as these other two guys, right? But
I think he does. He just hasn't had the performance to prove it yet. I feel like he can do all those things. He just doesn't necessarily have the same weapons around him. And
yeah.
He just hasn't done it yet. I feel like he's going to have one of these seasons, one of these MVP level seasons.
I could be wrong. I'm always willing to be proven wrong. I think Deshaun Watson is a great guy, but if you place the three of them in front of me, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, I think the way I rank that is I go Mahomes, Jackson, and then Watson, right? Because I think Watson has a good arm, good accuracy. I think they all have good arms, good accuracy, right? I think just Patrick Mahomes has a better arm. If one of them is going to have to run up the field, I think Lamar Jackson just has better outright, flat out, just speed to just run away from people. And then I think Deshaun Watson is just Deshaun Watson is just kind of good at both, but not exceptional at one or the other.
Yeah, and I just think that difference is kind of a rounding error at this point. DGM points out that the one thing that we can agree on is that none of them are Mitchell Trubisky, who was drafted ahead of all of them. So, sucks for the Bears. They're hoping that Nick Foles can take them to the promised land.
That ain't happening.
Yeah, that.
Oh, no, guys, and I no, like Nick no, Foles. No, guys, Mitch yeah. will be their starter. Mitch will be the week one starter.
All right. Well, okay. So, like, all these guys have, since they were drafted in the same year, they have contracts that expire at the same time. So, the Bears are going to have to figure out what the hell they want to do for Mitchell Trubisky's contract extension. He's not getting this kind of money, obviously, but they got to figure out how much money they want to pay him, or do they want to just give up on him altogether and draft somebody else and start over with this process.
I think unless you are going to go the route of getting an amazing running back and then two good wide receivers and then an O-line that could let him stand there for a year, you're going to draft somebody else. Because I think he is one of those quarterbacks. He does not have any dynamic athletic ability. You just kind of want him to either stand there and hand it to your running back or get a couple of chip yards, right? Because I also don't think he's going to launch it down the goddamn field. That's the only thing I can think the Bears can do. Or you just start Nick Foles and hope that he does Nick Foles things.
Yeah, they're not in a great situation. But I think the biggest loser out of all this is the Dallas Cowboys. I think it's the Dallas Cowboys because they are waiting and waiting and waiting to pay Dak Prescott. And we've talked about that in the past. This year they've got him on a franchise tag. But everybody, all these other top quarterbacks around Dak Prescott just keep getting paid more and more and more. And I feel like that just keeps pushing the ceiling up and up and up on what they would have to pay Dak Prescott if they signed him to a long-term contract.
All he has to do is walk into that front office and say, what are you going to do? Start Andy Dalton?
But the thing is, I feel like that's...
Jerry Jones might say, we are.
That's a very distinct possibility because, as we talked about, Andy Dalton is average. He is perfectly average. The fucking line that distinguishes where average quarterbacks are is named after Andy Dalton. So it's like, maybe they're better off paying an average quarterback $10 million a year rather than paying Dak Prescott $40 million. I don't know if that's true, but maybe, you know, I feel like Dak Prescott is also suffering from the fact that he's not as flashy as all these other quarterbacks that we've been talking about. Like I would like if you added him to the list of Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, and Dak Prescott, I would take Dak Prescott fourth out of all those. So, but you know, does that mean how much below them do you need to pay him in order to keep him, and is it worth it, or is it worth instead just investing in the rest of your team? So these are the questions that will probably get answered this season, or maybe we'll have to look out even further. But that's a couple of the more immediate stories that we have to look forward to in the NFL season as that season gets kicked off, on top of the overall shadow specter of, is this season actually going to make it all the way, or is it going to get canceled in due to COVID? That's always going to be a concern. What a time to be alive. Thank you all for waiting and seeing with us. Thank you all for listening to our show every week. Head on over to sportsoddsandends.com to find all the show notes and links to all the stories that we talked about. A lot of meaty ones this week, so I think we got a lot of good stuff there. Patreon.com/sportsoddsandends if you want to support us financially. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm at JVZ. Kaz is at King Kaz. DJM is at Call Me DJM. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.